Welcome to another episode of Fuchin Conversation. I'm so excited again this week. I have an opportunity to speak to Rita Irwin, who's at the University of British Columbia. She's a former associate dean of their teacher education programming, but so much more. Rita, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think you're also a chair director of curriculum studies. Also in terms of the work that you've done, artography. So I'm really looking forward to talking about the three pieces that you sent me. I have so many questions about artography, and I know in terms of artography and the work that you've done, it goes well beyond that. So in terms of your work in curriculum studies and teacher education. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Nicholas. Thank you for inviting me.
So how are you doing, Rita?
How am I doing? Well, you know, we're both talking in the midst of this pandemic. So I have had my ups and downs this spring, but you're catching me on a good day. So that's good. But yeah, so I've had to think differently about how I undertake my own work and just live in this world.
You know, I had a chance to read your piece on walking, and I really appreciated. You sent me three pieces that you've co-published with others. So your piece on walking with Alexandra and Kutcher is mm-hmm. How you'd say her last name. Mm-hmm. I read that last night. Well, actually, it was this. You know, probably the second or third time I read it, but I reread it last night, and then I went for a long jog/walk. Stop, pause. And in that piece, you call on slowing down. You can see in that work where, you know, I don't know. So yeah, I guess that's what I'm interested in. This is a piece where you were all out in Australia, mm-hmm. but you're calling on academics in many ways to slow down. And you kind of look at the ways in which you've slowed down through the work that you were doing there, and in an extension of artography, you're looking at the concept of cartography. So I'm just wondering what informed that work. How are you thinking about slowing down in relation to COVID-19? And I would link it, and I know this is I'm adding here to the question. I would link it to the other piece where you look at the concept of the wake. So, you know, slowing down in the wake of COVID-19. Was just wanted to hear your thoughts and how you were thinking about those pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you opened with recognizing my senior leadership position in teacher education. And I was associate dean of teacher ed for 10 years, and prior to that, head of the Department of Curriculum Studies for 6. So not so long ago, I finished that time in senior administration, 16 years in senior administration, followed afterwards by some other international leadership, and even before that with leadership. So I've been in leadership for a long time. I mention that in the case of bringing this up because somewhere along the line, I felt I always wanted to make sure I was still involved in everything I was passionate about and not just consumed by leadership. Even though I did a lot of it, I still continued to do my own work, my own art practice when I could, but it's certainly in my own art education scholarship and curriculum scholarship, and teacher education, etc. And so just thinking about that just makes me weary. Because we ask a lot of ourselves, I think, in education, and especially in higher education. And I don't regret any of it, but it was certainly a high bar that I placed for myself and tried to meet. And during those years, a lot of things were accomplished. And luckily, I was always working with a really wonderful graduate community. And they helped me really think through a lot of things. The articles I shared with you here, I purposely, in the last few years, tried to work with emerging scholars here and abroad. And I'm trying to, I think, push them forward a little bit more than myself. So I know I shared articles with you where others were first authors. I was still working with them on these, but I'm really in this part of my career, I'm trying to I think, give them a little more prominence. But also, I learn a lot from working with others and being with others as we're thinking through these ideas. So when it comes to slow scholarship, I mention my commitment to all these things because that is truly exhausting. But at the same time, I mean, I was passionate about it, excited. I was doing all of these things, but it's not, I don't really think it's sustainable. And as I progressed in my career, I'm thinking more and more about just how sustainable these actions of what higher education is expecting of us. So that particular paper where we're thinking about a cartography of slow scholarship, that was one where Lexi and I took that up as arts educators. And it was a time frame when the two of us were also thinking about our own practices, our own individual practices. And as it turns out, we were both interested in not only artigraphic ideas and artistic ideas, image-making ideas, but also walking. And she'd done a lot of writing about walking, and I have done that over the years. And so coming together, I took advantage of a time when I was spent a little bit of time on the Gold Coast where her university is. We both kind of confronted this. She had a little bit of a different trajectory in that she'd been a mother, a teacher, invested in both of those quite heavily and came to the academy a little bit later in life, but still nevertheless caught up in a lot of the expectations of the academy. And so it was an opportunity when we came together to really question these lives that we're leading and how can we do it differently. I have to say that for both of us, including walking in our practices, is a natural way of slowing down some, in that it offers an opportunity to, I think the natural environment, there's lots written about this, but the natural environment does give us pause. It helps us to think, to kind of think differently about our emotions, think differently about maybe even the scholarly ideas that we're taking up at the time. But it makes the body, it brings the body into all that we're doing, and we refocus ourselves on our positions of our bodies and how we're engaging in the world. So just taking up walking is incredible. But then what Lexi and I were able to do was, in addition to that walking and in addition to our own art practice, our photographic practice primarily there with the walking, was to then take that up and to think about it alongside some scholarly sources. And in addition to that, alongside our painting practices. In this one, in that particular article I sent you, we took advantage of the time we were together, created like an experiment for ourselves where at the beginning of each day when I went into campus with her, we started the day with an hour and a half of painting together based on our experiences, reflections, what we were thinking about the walks that we had been taking in a nearby rainforest as well as on the beaches that were nearby. And this created a kind of a revelation for us in a way, or at least opened us up to potentials we hadn't really fully appreciated before. In that, although both of us have done a lot of painting, we haven't actually kind of fitted into our days like that, where we began the day with that, we spent some time with this, we'd leave it alone, come back to it the next day, leave it alone, come back to it, that kind of thing. What we began to notice and I'll say this too, during those times, we were pretty quiet with one another. We were working on these large pieces together, and walking around and doing this work, and once in a while we would say something, but there was a lot of there was even a slowing down in the painting process, I guess, and being attentive to our bodies in that event, if you will. It really taught us something, because as we progressed into the rest of the day, which seemed to have more schedule attached to it, more timelines, perhaps more where we wanted some specific outcomes, that kind of thing. We both noticed that our intentions, our generosity towards ourselves, our just way of being in the world had shifted. And when we compared those days with days when we hadn't done that, they were different. So, and substantially different. This was a really interesting experience. I mean, usually when I take up, even now, even though I've learned this, even now, I have more of a tendency to want to kind of invest a larger chunk of time to art making or thinking. So I'm investing a half a day or something like that. Or if I'm writing, it's something that's quite more creative that I'm investing time to think and just be with it for a while. But in this instance, it was that kind of taking off the slice of the day. And it did teach me that just like people can exercise in the morning and that might help them with the rest of their day, I think this is also kind of opening up slow practices, slowing ourselves down to some of our practices that help us with our scholarship is also very timely. And we can learn a lot from that.
Thank you for that. You know, when I read it, immediately it provoked me to free associate to a memory of David Abrams' book called The Spell of the Sensuous. And I actually was thinking about
The Spell of the Sensuous.
And I was thinking about that this morning when I was out along the Kitchissippi, which is the big river and close to our home. And if you entertain me for a second, I set aside this passage because I was thinking about you all in Australia and I'd lived there for 2 years too. And I there's this passage that I'll never forget. It's in the chapter on In the Landscape of Language, but it's, he writes later, we came to the confluence of two streams. That is, we met the stream we had crossed higher up on the main road. This lesser stream was the route of the Tilpamen. I don't know if I'm saying that right. And we were joining it at right angles. As our Katie turned the wheel to the left, Limpy bounced into action. Again, he shoved his head through both windows. His eyes rolled wildly over the rocks, the cliffs, the palms, the water. His lips moved at the speed of a ventriloquist, and through them came a rustle, the sound of wind through branches. Arcady knew at once what was happening. Limpy had learnt his native cat couplets for walking pace at 4 miles an hour, and we were traveling at 25. Arcady shifted into bottom gear, and we crawled along no faster than a walker. Instantly, Limpy matched his tempo to the new speed. He was smiling. His head swayed to and fro. The sound became a lovely, melodious swishing, and you knew that, as far as he was concerned, he was the native cat. I just like, for me, like the way in which you were talking about walking and embodiment in relation to the work that you both were trying to do, but beyond, and which struck me, and I'm still trying to figure this out. It kind of blew my mind. I'm trying to figure out engaging image making beyond representationalism, and so that relationship between self and the. So I don't know how you're thinking about that in terms of the work that you did there in Australia, but also later on that the work that you were able to do with Valerie Triggs or Natalie LeBlanc, and how artography in many ways calling us to move beyond what is represented or what we can represent through art.
Yes. So like in the slow scholarship paper, you don't see pictures or photographs of us walking. But as we take up the embodiment, what is more than the experience of walking. And so it takes us to somewhere else, to more than. And so then we're experiencing that in a different way. And even the writing beside those images is purposely shifting how we're taking up the images. So these things are side by side, but they're not replacing one another. One is not explaining the other. So the text is not explaining the image, nor is the image explaining the text, but they are complementary and they help us see things differently. And in essence, as an arts person would say, is that we need both. We need the image to help us understand something that's beyond the text, And so I think, you know, as you were reading from that text, that I remember reading that book many years ago, and it was such a wonderful book. It makes me think I should go back to it. It helps us think of taking it in, and to the point where we're so absorbed by it that we become more than it, actually.
For me, reading the three pieces alongside each other and in many ways in relation to each other. So when I go back to each piece, each helps me form different kinds of relationships with it. So even as you describe, like the texts with the art, there's a, it really speaks to the concepts that you indicate distinguish artography from like arts-based research in terms of that liminal space of the relationship between the text and the art, and more so you troubling a kind of an epistemological stance and rather calling for an ontological stance in terms of the experimentations that you are all doing.
I think ontology figures very prominently in this work. So it is a way of being in the world, way of being and becoming. And that almost takes more prominence than trying to understand, you know, whatever the specifics of what knowledge could be. But this is very much embodiment. It's very much about the potential. What potentials exist for coming to know something differently, whether it's ourselves, our bodies, our ways of understanding being in the world. It is about what's beyond, the more than, the potential for knowing something differently. Which I have to say, I mean, I know this is an aside, but I'm going to drop it in here anyway. One of my reasons for I think continuing to do this kind of work is to make sure that people don't forget that that's what the arts, that's one of the biggest contributions the arts make, is knowing something beyond how we can name it or even claim it. There's the ineffable. There's always that which we are not able to describe or name. There's more than. And so the more you're involved in arts practices, all forms of arts practices, as well as having them side by side or engaging in activities that are similar to them, like walking, you're able to take in so much more in life. And in fact, you started off asking about the pandemic. And I have to say, I think a lot of us are becoming to realize that, who's essential in our, so that we can continue living. And we're looking at who's essential and how are they being paid and recognized. And one thing that's really striking me is that the arts are everywhere. People are painting, they're singing, they're playing instruments, they're writing, they're expressing themselves. They're telling stories. So it's really interesting living in this time right now, because we're protecting ourselves, and boy oh boy, do we need to slow down and think about the arts and where we are, and that's going to keep us alive and healthy. So that's just a little bit aside for why the arts are so important in education.
Yeah, I think that's so pertinent, and I find, you know, not everyone, and I think most people that I've been lucky enough to work with have been open to the arts or even artography. But there is this shift that you articulate in the piece with Natalie. So, well, two things, because I know not just the students will be familiar with the work that you do through reading your work, but I was wondering if you could explain a little bit about how you came to artography in terms of its formulation. So I say artography, and we've been talking about it now for a bit, but artist, researcher, teacher, and then of course theography, writer. Yeah, so I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, and then perhaps I was trying to think through with you about the shift from humanist approaches, which is very fits in nicely with last week I'd spoken to Ted Christou, who's deeply committed to humanism and how we can become better human beings. And what I read and what you and Natalie put forth in relation to kind of a shift away from in terms of image making and artography toward the more than human world.
So yes, artography is an interesting beginning, I guess. So I'll go as far back as my own doctoral program, because I came out of my master's from the U of Vic, where Antoinette Oberg had these wonderful people coming, and I learned from tremendous scholars. And I wanted to do action research as a result of that in my doctoral program. Unfortunately, at UBC, I wasn't able to put together a committee that that believed in that. So I ended up doing ethnography. I went away to Lakehead. I taught there for 4 years. I came back to UBC. And in that time frame, there had been a bit of a shift. So action research was starting to be more valued. So when I started teaching a graduate course in art education at UBC, I wanted to experiment with that. And so I included a small little action research project in one of my art education graduate courses. And what struck me really profoundly in that course was students loved it. They loved how it was making it relevant to them, that it helped them then think through their own practices, etc. But because I was working in arts education, all of these arts students needed to think through their arts practice. And so this was a different twist on it. And so being in arts education, of course, I was open to that. And I was really struck by how most of them needed to think through their material practices as they were, you know, thinking about their pedagogical practices. And that particular semester is something that really, inspired some of those students, were the gender issues that we had taken up in some of the readings, etc. And so I had this wonderful opportunity at the end of that course. I had a few of them who wanted to stay with me and keep working on a project around gender issues. And so I put together this small little project at the time, where five students and myself were working together, and I was able to get a little bit of research funding in the faculty. And I thought this would be a group that would stay together for maybe a half a year or something. But we ended up working together for 5 years. And it was during that time where I continued on this path of really thinking much more about how arts educators, as they're thinking about their pedagogy and their practice and who they are and what they're doing, et cetera, they really need this, their own art practice, to be a part of it. And just as I've explained the complementarity of this work, part of it is that, but part of it is it's so in them, it's so a part of them, of who they are and what they're doing, that it was actually necessary for them to do this. And at the time, any of our graduate programs, whether it was in master's theses or doctoral dissertations, were not doing any of this. At that time in the 90s, the only thing that was getting some attention then was narrative inquiry and a little bit of reader's theater maybe. And of course, we'd come out of a time frame where Elliot Eisner and Tom Barone had done a lot of work with those, and certainly with connoisseurship and et cetera. But it was narrative inquiry that was taking off. And so for my students, although we appreciate narrative inquiry, it was like, well, what about visual inquiry or other forms of artistic inquiry? And so we really took that up. And so in that time frame, we started presenting at conferences, we had exhibitions, we were writing about it. But the word artography was not... it was actually not coined. I didn't coin it until the early 2000s. And so the work that we'd been doing was actually gelling and evolving for probably 8 years, maybe 8 to 10 years, before the word artography kind of came to me. Before then, it was much more about just thinking about, mostly about action research, actually. But through an artistic lens. So it was kind of an arts-based action research. But as we got more into it, and especially as the various methodologies and practices were emerging with other forms, art forms around arts-based educational research, I had great discussions with Elliot Eisner, because in all of those forms that were happening in the 90s, and even in the early to mid 2000s, it was always taking social science-based data and then interpreting it artistically. What I was trying to say to Elliot Eisner at the time was, wait a second here. Artists also have their own form of inquiry, their own type of engagement. This is very relevant. This is a part of the practice. So anything that's arts-based should actually have the artistic practice as part of that process. And he and I would have great discussions over this. It took him quite a while before he actually embraced this. I would say,
yeah, I'm still here. That? Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm so quiet. Oh. I'm enjoying the story.
Oh, I'm
just
sorry.
So quiet.
I'm sorry to interrupt it. I thought for a second it's so quiet. Did I leave?
Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm like, now I want to know what happened to Elliot Eisner.
Well, no, and in fact, Elliot and Tom even had me come and teach an ARA a winter course with them once, which I thought was a big thing, was because, you know, I had a different view that actually, from an artographic perspective, the processes were just as important as the products that you could create using the arts. Anyway, over time, we started writing about it, and actually, so that's, I just wanted to really point that out, because that was where artography as a word was needed at the time, because we really were doing more then. It was different from arts-based educational research, because really, in those early days, arts-based educational research was taking social science-based methods and then interpreting them, creating stories from them, whatever. But they were not doing the process. The actual inquiry itself did not include an artistic process. So artography at the time was embracing both. And I think Ted Aoki's work, even Bill Pinar's work with Careri, and certainly Ted Aoki's work with Living Inquiries, was all influential in this too. I know I don't talk a lot about curriculum studies in this work, but it really does permeate those, especially those early discussions. And in fact, one of the premises of the early part of artography was around living inquiry. So much of that comes from both of those scholars. And just living and being with their work really influenced, again, kind of giving credibility and legitimacy to what I felt was coming up as I was working with these students. And the other thing that was bothering me in the academy, as I mentioned earlier, was that we couldn't really do that work and have it legitimized. So at some point I thought, you know what, we really have to take this up and make it legitimate. So in the first groups, it was more master's groups, and I had them start to finish theses. And once we had a few theses through, then I had several PhD students who were willing to take it up. And it was around that time when the first artography book was coming up. And actually, it was while I was writing the introduction to that book, and I was trying to think through some ideas and just, what am I going to call this here? For a long time, we liked the idea of the ART, because it helped us think through that we could be all of those things. We weren't just art teachers. We were also researchers, but we weren't just teachers. We were also artists. And because of how important I saw that being with the teachers I was working with, I was really consumed with that. Like I had to give that credibility for people. And so the ART was something we had played with. And the slashes in between, I think, also comes a lot from Ted's work with that liminal space, the in-between, but also understanding that it's such a vibrant space in between those identities. In that era anyway. And it's not that one is being absorbed by the other. They are existing side by side, and yet they're all together. And so they are and they're not. They're, you know, they're together and they're not, exist simultaneously. And also I think the playfulness with these ideas, that the ART can stand for one thing, but it can also stand for art, for instance. And then the graphy, in those days, because this feels like a long time ago, but I used to have many, many discussions with my students about, well, is text really needed? Why can't the art just stand for itself? And it's certainly in faculties of fine art, you know, people have exhibitions, and usually the artists aren't necessarily writing the didactics that go with it. It might be the curator or something. So we had lots of discussions on that. But I think over that time frame, we came to recognize that no matter what, there's always text with text. Is language permeates our world, whether it's in text or in discourse or in spoken word, etc. And so to separate it out is pretty artificial. And so text became, or the graphy, the writing of it, became something that we recognized was very complementary to whatever artistic form that was needed. And then it worked well because it also seemed to give some credibility, I think, to other forms of methodology, like ethnography, for instance. So the writing of culture in that case, but in this case, it's the writing of the arts or the arts and education, and or however you want to describe that. So I still remember where I wrote that chapter. It was not where I live now, but it was where I was really grappling with these ideas and trying to encapsulate it in a word and make it different from what already existed there. I guess in a nutshell, that's where artography came from. It hasn't, and by the way, I want to say that in keeping with kind of an artistic disposition, the arts continue to evolve, and I'm hoping that teaching and learning continues to evolve, and for that matter, even research practices, but absolutely for the arts, that's fundamental to them. I have very purposely, along with those that I've worked with, very purposely tried not to stabilize artography. And even though there have been certain things attributed to it over the years, because perhaps there's been more aspects of it that have written about than others, I've tried very hard. I've never written a book on how to do artography, for instance. It's not meant to be something that I can just give to you as a recipe. And it's something that one has to live with and through and to experience and to come to grips with. So in the other paper where we talk about the new materialism, I think if you look at some of the earlier writings of artography, there was still a lot of interest in some of the similar ideas that are being taken up now. But it's true that some people have really set artography aside because of the identities of artist, researcher, teacher. Perhaps that is something that we spent too long talking about, because it's not that simple. It is so much about the processes and the embodiment and the engagement and the potentials and what else is there. For me, anyway, I think artography should be growing and changing, and shouldn't even be aligned necessarily with particular scholars or particular artists or even art educators, which is another reason why I'm trying to encourage more people to write about it rather than just myself. Yeah, that's kind of a very quick overview of
what I hear you saying at the end is that there's the danger of it becoming kind of a methods or a process. If, you know, here I need to write about myself as artist, as researcher and teacher, and this is how you go about doing it, as opposed to living artography in relation to the world. I do hear, though, those, even though in the three pieces that you sent, there are echoes of, yeah, there's echoes of different scholars. So I know, like in the piece with Natalie, and I'll just read a couple of sections here, which really resonated with me. And I love the concept of the wake, and just because, you know, I grew up going fishing and was on boats quite a bit. And as a kid, you always look at the wake and where it makes, and you get told like we shouldn't make a big wake here, or if you need. So like the one piece you say, like the wake spoke to the affect of the process event in which knowledge emerging from the middle and growing at the edges was not always a comfortable place. And that to me sounds so Aokian. And then go on to this concept of of rendering. So the wake rendered the sense of aliveness that materialized in an ambiguous and transient space, and then go on to kind of illustrate the very thing that you said you hope artography is not, that the word wake cannot be defined, but if we were to think about three definitions, not only is it a noun for the track left behind a moving ship, it's also a verb meaning to awaken, to be aroused from mental activity, to become alive or active, to be restored to life, and to hold vigil for someone who's deceased as an act of commemoration. And so I'm wondering how, I want to return to that idea that you have, like, so you talk in the works about the concept of renderings and affiliate some of those kind of like assemblages, renderings, to the works of Deleuze Guattari, but also image making. And so I'm just wondering, how are you living, perhaps not necessarily artography at this point in time, but in terms of image making, in since COVID-19 started, we've been asked to self-isolate in terms of our physical distancing from others. Have you been working? Have you been working, making images in relation to the wake that we find ourselves in?
Oh yes. So I find such joy, if you will, in working with my PhD students, and I have a group that I'm working with right now. I actually have a short project where I'm working with about seven sites. My site here at UBC, but there's four or five international sites. But we've all taken up artography in a very place-based way, and we've taken it up through walking. And it was interesting working with my own study group here at UBC. As we were meeting, we decided, because we were meeting and going on walks, physically going together on walks and doing some work together and creating things separately and together. But when all this happened, everything changed, right? And in one of our Zoom meetings, we decided, you know what, we should take up the proposition of going on a walk during the pandemic. So each of us are walking during the pandemic. So every couple of weeks, in fact, I have a meeting with them in 2 days. So during this time frame, where usually it's about photography, each of us are going on our photo walks. We're collecting photos. We're writing about what we're thinking and experiencing. And oftentimes there's kind of this complementarity again with the image and the text. But there's I'm finding that each one of us take it up a bit differently, but it's wonderful to come together and share with one another to learn how we're taking it up. Some people are doing this very independently. Some are doing it with children. Some are doing it just in their neighborhood. Some are going elsewhere. There are some different variables there, but nevertheless, we're all thinking about this isolation, all that means, whether it's being fearful of others or careful of others or all of that. So I actually can see some work coming out of this from this group that I'm working with right now. I think it's been really helpful for all of us emotionally and actually even in scholarly terms, because as a group, what we typically do is, maybe not every time, we put different emphases. So sometimes we emphasize the art making, sometimes it's the physicality, the walking, sometimes it's about what we're reading and thinking, or sometimes it's about sharing what it is that we're writing. Yeah, so we're doing all those things. The one thing I have noticed across my career that's pretty constant is I tend to be a person who really enjoys working with groups of people. I can certainly write on my own and do things on my own, but I thrive in this environment of working with these groups. And the one thing about Zooming with my PhD students in this study group, it's taken me out of myself into understanding things differently, which has been really helpful. So yes, I am doing this practice during this time.
The two concepts that really spoke to me, and even in the story that you shared about your own coming to artography and how it was initially started with teachers that you were able to if we wanted to use an Aokian term, linger with for 5 years, in many ways was what could be read as what you put forth as the concept of intravention and versus intervention and intraction versus interaction. And I'm just wondering if you could speak to the differences between those concepts and how you've been thinking about them.
I think about them as intervention, there's more, you know what each side has and what is bringing, and there's an expectation of what's going to happen when you come together. So like, for instance, I think of a conversation. We know that each side, I know who that other person is, and we're going to do this together. And intervention has much more, for me anyway, has much more of the allowing for the unexpected, even allowing for a different directionality, even allowing for me to understand what's happening for myself at the time, recognizing that something else might be happening for the other at the time. So there's much more potential for more than what is obvious, is probably how I would think about that. And actually that does kind of respond a bit to your earlier alluding to the wake, of Natalie's wake. What I love about Natalie's wake is that it's is this ripple that keeps on going, and we don't actually ever see the end. We don't know when it ends, if it ever ends. It helps us understand that there's something that's perpetual movement, and there's something that's going to keep propelling us forward. What I love about that idea is that it's different from reflection. When I think, and I can teach your education, we thought so much about thinking back on what we've done and how we can improve it, or what can we learn from it, and that's all good. But what I love about this other is that we're not looking back. In this instance, we're looking beyond. So we're looking for what's possible, what's potential. Where could this go? So, in a sense, I'm actually hoping that artography recognizes both, but it probably gives more preference to the potential, and that we're looking for more than. And this also goes back to when you brought up this idea of the renderings. And I suppose if there is something that has persisted with artography, it's been this idea of the renderings. And that was because it was a methodology that really took up concepts as being the method. So although you could certainly have social science methods like interviews, observations, etc., what happens for artists? What happens for teachers who are really thinking about their practices? It really comes down that the concepts themselves are methods to help us think about what it is or what's happening and what could happen. And so renderings was an artistic word that helped us understand that idea of concepts as methods. And so the concepts that were shared as renderings were meant to be evocative or provocative to help people who might take up or try to understand artography as being just that, that it's never something that you can kind of know the limits of. And yet at the same time, you could hold it. So I think these metaphors that I've been mentioning, they all have that in common, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, in terms of renderings of these concepts, it resonates with the ways in which you've leaned on Guattari and Deleuze's work in terms of deterritorialization and reterritorialization, and especially in terms of taking up the concepts through different mediums through the art making. And so that the concepts, even through the art making, I guess they're the lived curriculum in terms of the potentiality of what we might come to understand in the moment. That's why, like, when I was reading the work, it's just like, what I love is, and which becomes more and more difficult, I think, in terms of teacher education and even thinking about my own sons in the classroom, it's that they have to perform a reproduction of representation that's being expected as opposed to trying to think through different concepts and experimenting and the kinds of renderings that they can. Like, so thinking about their learning as art making.
Yes.
In many ways. Yes.
Yes. We need a rethink on education that way. If the arts could be a guiding force on that. And in fact, I think there has been some movement in that direction where it's more project-based, more inquiry-based. Yes, the arts could figure prominently in there and thinking through, you know, setting up a proposition. Well, what if this? And following it through and learning as we're going. And as we learn as we're going, we'll also learn what else we need to learn. And I realize that that's... there might be some danger that we haven't learned what everything society wants us to learn. But right now, kids are not learning everything we think they're learning anyway. So I think we're actually losing some human potential by not giving kids more opportunities to think of them directing projects, of us actually coming up with projects that they can pursue in a much more open-ended way and to see where it goes. I'll tell you, when I was a classroom teacher, I remember studying drama education, which was like my second area. After I'd become a teacher, I went back to take more courses at the University of Lethbridge. And I did this one course that Dorothy Hathcott, I don't know if you know that name, but she was a prominent drama educator in the UK. And some of her work was all about this. And as I was learning this, I actually did an experiment with my grade six kids. And in my homeroom. And at the time, it was all around, I don't know if you remember, but there was the hostage taking in Iran, where it went on for like over a year. It was a very, and also, and actually the Canadian ambassador was very prominent and part of
Ben. They made the
movie. Yeah, they made
the movie with Ben Affleck.
Yes, that's right. They made the movie on that. Well, so I was teaching grade six at that time, and so I basically created a proposition for my kid. I didn't realize it was a proposition at the time, but I had them. Let's say, let's take this up. Let's think about this and get involved with this. Create some scenarios around this and think it through and think through all the various aspects of this. And I'll tell you, that went on for several months. We didn't do it all the time, of course, but every so often we would take it up. And it was one of the most exciting things I ever did as a teacher. And I'll tell you, it was because I knew those kids were totally involved in all of it. And they were kind of like directing it. I had kind of created the conditions for them, but they were, and it has always stuck with me that that's where real learning is happening. And so we need to do more of that with kids, I think.
The students in the course where we're doing these podcasts for will be reading these works as they think about how they want to take up their, how they would like to put forth their curriculum as lived in relation to the course, but more importantly, the larger context of COVID-19. And I'm hoping through reading your work, it might provoke them to think about different ways in which they might put forth. And I'm having a hard time saying this, but maybe not put forth, but engaging the art making of how they want to communicate, as opposed to thinking about it as a representational process.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, experiencing it. I mean, it's not to say that you can't represent. And so, I mean, for some people, that's probably where they start. But there comes a point in time when you want to think differently about what your experiences are. And to let yourself do that. Let's say, I'm just going to throw this out, that we can find something positive in this negative. You know, that's just an idea. This is a simple thing, but when I go for my walks, I find that there tends to be some places I prefer to go walking. But in this pandemic, I have found that a lot of other people like to go to those places too. So I have decided I'm not going where there's lots of other people. And so it's actually forced me to go walks where there's not that many people. And so there you go. And that's given me other opportunities to think differently about many things. So, I mean, that's a very, very simplistic example, but it's you kind of listen to what your body is inviting you to think about and take in.
I'm looking forward to seeing what, you know, journeying to places that people aren't or finding those, those roots. two things. The first thing before we finish up today is, I've never really thanked you enough for, you had mentioned like the work and what you enjoy doing with your grad students or teacher candidates, over your career, mm-hmm. but you've been so supportive of emerging scholars, and that includes myself. And I'll never forget, I was a grad student in the curriculum theory project at Louisiana State University. And one of my first projects there as a research assistant was to copy edit and put together a curriculum in a new key, the Teddy Aoki collection. And, and I learned so much reading through that and putting it, but you know, that was, 20 years ago. So I've known you for 20 years. Yeah. And back then, they did not have the technology that they have today to try to represent certain images in a book.
No.
As simple as some of those images, not the way in which he takes them off. There was some certainly out of my league art making in that collections. So I wanted to thank you for that you've been so generous with students, and also the reminding us to slow down in terms of the work. How do you think, like, so you trouble the idea of challenging the concept that there's a point, like that there's one point. And so how do you, in terms of art making and from artography, how do you come at that with students, especially in light of the different ways in which we might see or approach, whether it's a pandemic, the rise of anti-Asian racism in Canada? How do you think through artography or art making in relation to those, you know, you said you engaged as social action research before, but those issues around social justice, have you thought about that work, or have you done that work? I know you've done that work in terms of the work in Darfur and the refugee camps, and how you're involved with that in teacher ed. So I'm just wondering how you think about that in relation to your work.
I haven't been as much of a social activist in, like, I'm not a person who goes out, let's say, in protests or something like that. However, I do think that I can help people think differently. So for instance, I think probably the most recent project that was, I would call kind of an activist project, might have been the Richgate project, which was taking up immigrant stories in the city that I live in here, Richmond, and working with intergenerational families around their stories from, of immigration and particularly their stories of being in Canada. And through images, through texts, through storytelling, visually and textually, we had exhibitions. We had people come to those exhibitions and think differently about those topics. Those exhibitions were in Canada and China, and we learned different things politically and socially in both countries. But when you were talking about this social justice, I was thinking to myself about at the end of that project, we put up posters in a number of bus stops. And these were very well done. These were professionally done. And they had to do with trying to draw attention to different places in this city, in a close-up way and also in a far enough and a farther perspective, so close up and far away, and helping people think about, do you know your community? Do you know who lives here? Do you know the history of this community? That kind of thing. And so, and drawing their attention to this. And simultaneously, this having some other activities at museums and galleries, etc. And I think as a kind of an artist, if it's an artist activist, it's trying to have people address these things, think about these things in their daily lives, and how can they think differently about who's in their environment, the history of our place, the place that we're living, how can we live together differently? So it's been more provocative or evocative, I suppose, in through the power of the image and text to get people to think differently. So that's been more, I think, of how, and then of course through and of course through teaching and having, and I think not confronting it in a way. Like, for instance, I made a very big point in my own teaching, especially when I'm doing any kind of a curriculum course or methods course in art, is it really changed how I've taught over my career, and where I would have started in a much more technical. Learning the techniques, if you will, of art. Now it's much more about concepts, and it's much more about giving people experiences and having people being aware. So, for instance, when I want them to be aware of artists, I make sure that they're at least half of the artists I show in any class is always Indigenous artists, and that's Indigenous in Canada or elsewhere. As well as artists from a whole variety of ethnic backgrounds and genders. Whereas I think, you know, when I first started in my career, I think most people probably thought of the Western canon and, you know, very male-based. So, you know, things have changed. And I think through the way I'm doing it anyway, is that we take it up. We treat it differently. We accept it. We're trying to, and if it is something that needs to be confronted, I try to do it in a way that respectful and so that people can understand that, you know, society's changed, and we just need to do things differently.
I think I'm hoping that that'll be the case as we reemerge from COVID-19. I say reemerge. Yeah. We could just be integrated for the way in which we move forward. And I mean, what you just shared really speaks to the work that you reference in the one piece with Natalie about Sylvia Kine, who asked the question in her dissertation, what happens when we think artography through ethics and alterity? And so maybe it's like, for me, I asked you that question. So social justice might not necessarily be the best term or a concept to work through. Doing that kind of work, right? There's other ways of doing it. Well, I just thanks so much, Rita, for taking the time out of your day today to speak to me. I really appreciate it. I'm thinking differently now, and you've really provoked me to think through the work that I'm currently doing. And I'm looking so forward to taking up these three pieces with grad students in the next probably 4 or 5 weeks from now. And so just I'm hoping that if you're open to it, we might touch base with you again. And I'd love to have you back on the podcast to talk to you. So thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you so much. And best wishes to you and your students.